This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We want to revisit where is the situation with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. To do that, we've got Brian Batko, one of our great Steelers beat writers. We'll also talk some Pirates with Andrew Destin. It's going to be a fun episode. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. He's Brian Batko, one of our great Steelers beat writers. And as always, you can read all of our work at post-gazette.com. You can find us here on your favorite podcasting app or on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all the daily content that comes out from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, which is sponsored by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. More on them later. Brian, did you get to enjoy any Pittsburgh beers on your Father's Day?
Yeah, I don't think I actually drank any local beers. I should have, but it was more of just,
for shame,
your domestic light beers by the pool. So, I mean, there's for that for sure. But it would have been great to get down to Mike's, but I had a nice little Father's Day. We went to one of those like smaller zoos outside of Allegheny County. It's kind of like a petting zoo, souped up petting zoo with some other big animals. So we did that, and then came back and went swimming for the rest of the day. Can't complain. It was pretty nice.
Can't beat that. And you guys got it in right before it got super hot with the heat wave that's coming in. But
and no Ray Fittipaldo this week. So hopefully Ray enjoyed his Father's Day as well. And hopefully he's enjoying his whole week off here, which means you get me on a Monday. I'm batting leadoff for once. Normally I'm cleaning up on Fridays, but I'll do my best.
Absolutely. I want to talk about the Steelers quarterback situation, and we've gone over it, but now we've gotten a chance to see Russell Wilson and Justin Fields up close at OTAs and minicamp. And we've also gotten a chance to talk to both of them. You can see both of their scrums with us in the Pittsburgh media on the YouTube page of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Go check that out. We recently published Justin Fields' latest scrum over the weekend. And Brian, there are some who feel like Justin Fields, when we're talking to him and they're seeing the video of him talking, he doesn't seem too enthusiastic. He doesn't seem super excited, to be talking at that point in time. But I think it's because he's the backup quarterback right now, and he's just trying to figure out what his role is going to be in this offense behind a guy who's been a 9-time Pro Bowler. And again, everyone's learning this the same offense right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of people who don't really want to hear this, Chris, but it is a lot like, and it reminds me of the 2022 situation when Mitch Trubisky came in as the free agent signed veteran. Kenny Pickett was here as the hotshot first round rookie. Granted, Justin Fields, not a rookie, but, he's the younger guy in the room. He's the one getting sort of a fresh look from the Steelers. I mean, he basically wants to, try to reinvent his career after the three seasons he played in Chicago. So it's not apples to apples, but it's similar to me in that, early on in those days for Kenny, I think he almost got fatigued a little bit talking about, I'm I'm the backup. I'm getting the quarterback two reps, doing what I can, competing, trying to show the coaches and impress. But, you know, what goes unsaid is basically like, I'm not even taking any reps with the first team. So what, you know, what do you really want me to do? I don't know that Justin Fields is getting frustrated by it. I don't know that Kenny was frustrated by it back then, but I think there is a baseline level for any competitor, especially a quarterback who was drafted highly and has been very successful at various points in his career. Yeah, you want to be out there. You want the ball to at least get an opportunity with the first team. But this is why we've been kind of telling people from jump that Mike Tomlin's using the phrase pole position carefully. And it really means that Russell Wilson is the guy. He's getting all the first team reps because they want him to gel with his starting O-line and starting receivers and starting tight end and, you know, get all of those looks. And it's going to be scraps right now for Justin Fields for a little bit. And it's early. Maybe things will reset. Maybe they'll change to some degree once we get out to Latrobe. But yeah, he's kind of in the shadows. He's on the back burner a little bit right now. So you probably get to a point of, what more do you want me to say right now?
I think that's the thing here, is that people are wondering, you know, when people think about quarterback battles, and that's how the, you know, some people portrayed this quarterback situation was a quarterback.
That's how the outside, like the national media and a lot of the outside world, has been painting this from the beginning, Chris. As you know, I mean, you see a lot of the pundits on ESPN or NFL Network or wherever sort of coming in and being like, okay, these two guys are on equal footing, 50-50. Here's why I think Fields has a chance to swing the 51 into his favor. And it's just like, those of us locally who have, you know, lived through the last quarterback quote unquote competition here, I think had a sense that it wasn't going to go that way.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that this is the trend with the Steelers. I wanted to ask Brian, is this a right or wrong way to handle a quarterback situation where you sign a veteran who's more experienced than the other? Like let's go back to, if we go back to Mitch Trubisky, he was the more experienced veteran compared to Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett. And this time around, Russell Wilson is the more experienced veteran compared to Justin Fields or Kyle Allen. And so he is presumably the number one quarterback, and it's less of a battle, more of a, hey, is this guy going to hold on to the top position? And will this guy in the number two spot just completely wow everyone? And can he even completely wow everyone while being in the number two spot to move up in the ranks? Because we've never seen that with the Steelers. And granted, it's only been a few years of doing this because Ben Roethlisberger was around forever. But is this a good or a bad thing in your eyes? Or is it just a thing that isn't good or bad?
I mean, I don't love it. The coaches certainly know better than me what they're seeing and how they're working this and what their plan or vision is. But I mean, I think that it would be better to give Justin Fields at least a few more opportunities. I think it's fair to wonder, you know, what did they tell Russell Wilson when they signed him as far as being that the starter and being the guy wire to wire? And I'm not saying Russell Wilson wouldn't want to work with the second team at all, or that he would bristle at going with the backups. I don't think he would. I think he'd be willing to take however many reps he can get. And that's probably part of this too, in the defense of Mike Tomlin and the Steelers. They probably figure, look, new guy coming in from the outside, new play caller, new faces on offense. Every single snap in preparation counts and matters. We don't want to waste them, for lack of a better word, on a guy that we're pretty darn sure is not going to be under center week one. But that also becomes somewhat of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If that's the mindset that you're going in with, then yeah, how could Justin Fields ever have an opportunity to impress you enough to be under center week one? So I think it all just comes back to whether it was when Russell Wilson was first signed and Kenny Pickett was still here. We all kind of could read the room and knew what was going on there. Russell Wilson did not sign here to compete, let alone right, be a backup at this stage of his career. And even once they traded for Justin Fields, yeah, I still think the division of labor was pretty well defined. And, you know, I don't even know, once we get to St. Vincent College, how those dynamics could really shift a lot. I mean, if Justin Fields absolutely lights it up against the second team defense with the second team offense in practice, maybe he does earn more of that varsity work. Mike Tomlin is on record as saying, if you make enough plays out here, we're going to believe you. But it is always a little different. It is always a little tricky at the quarterback spot, where we know it's different than every other position on the field. There can only be one, and you're not going to rotate, not going to be seeing any two quarterback systems or anything like that. So that does put Fields in a little bit of a bind, and I'm sure, you know, he's been through a lot already in his NFL career. He's probably developed some pretty thick skin to this point after all the ups and downs with the Bears. But I think there's always just a natural level of, hey, it gets a little old only being the backup, and we'll see how things go when we get to training camp. And who knows, maybe he will get some elevated opportunities and see what he does with them.
And we did see, you know, Kenny Pickett that year go from third string to second string quarterback over Mason Rudolph. But again, you know, second string to first string, that's a whole different battle. And I think it would involve also Russell Wilson having to play poorly. And also, I think you look at last year, how much should the preseason matter when Kenny Pickett led a touchdown drive on every time he touched the field? So I think there's a lot of questions that the Steelers will have or boxes they have to check, or questions they want answered from watching these guys play that we're not even sure about as journalists at this point. But that's what's going to make watching this training camp very interesting, I think, in the eyes of everyone.
Yeah, and I don't even know, like, I think even if Russell Wilson's serving up interceptions or getting passes batted out at Latrobe, I mean, I think you're still going to kind of take that with a grain of salt because of his overall body of work to this point in his career, right or wrong. Like, I think back to 2022, I don't know about you, Chris. I mean, dig into your memory bank, but I don't remember Mitch Trubisky being overly impressive in those settings. I remember Mason Rudolph being more impressive than him, at least in the early going. Mm-hmm. He played a lot more conservative and was checking down and just kind of running the offense. But you know, now with the benefit of hindsight, maybe that did mean something even all the way back then. And Kenny looked skittish as a rookie, but you'd expect that for a guy taking his first NFL reps. He was working with a bunch of O lineman who probably at the local warehouse by now or something. So that was difficult for him as well. But yeah, that's a good point, Chris. I mean, Kenny was able to kind of slay Mason Rudolph to get to the two spot, but Mitch Trubisky never really slummed it with the backups. He was installed as the guy from the beginning, and whatever guise of a competition there was never really came to be, I don't think.
I want to talk about Najee Harris too, because he's a big part of this offense. And he didn't talk through OTAs or minicamp. And I want to talk about the tone that will be with Najee Harris heading into training camp when they get back together in late July. We'll do that next here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Brian Batko. But first, remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, there are over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local Pittsburgh beers are available on tap. And when you go there, you can try out different kinds. They're always switching new ones in and out. You can also try their amazing food, like steak on a stone, where your choice cut of steak is brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut off a piece, you press it into that stone, and you choose how well done you want every single bite. They also have over 20 televisions to check out whatever sporting event that you want to keep up with. They're also right across the street from PNC Park, making them a perfect destination for your before, during, or after Pittsburgh Pirates games while you're enjoying
on the mound
night out. And Paul Skeens is on the mound tonight. So go check out the Pirates. Go check out Mike's Beer Bar. And it's the best place to be when you're enjoying a night out in Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Brian Batko. Brian, let's get into Najee Harris a little bit here. Granted, we didn't really get to learn too much about Najee Harris for how he might be feeling or what his approach is to this season after not getting his fifth-year option extended. Now, we did hear GM Omar Khan take the airwaves on 93.7 The Fan over this past week and talk about how, like, it was a business decision, and there's still the possibility of Najee Harris sticking with the team long-term. But what has been your readout as far as how this situation has gone? We saw Najee Harris, and you know, we even posted video of him being very active in OTAs, where he was messing with Dijon Edwards, the Georgia running back, and things like that, and being really involved in that. But in minicamp, he was there, he was present, but he wasn't participating in the team drills. Granted, Russell Wilson was also saying, like, hey, this guy's asking me questions every day. He's being involved. He's going to be here. I spoke to Eddie Faulkner. He said he's been very involved. What's your readout on just how this part of the offseason has gone for Najee Harris?
Yeah, Eddie Faulkner said on Wednesday that, or maybe it was Tuesday, that Najee Harris has been no different. He's been fine with the option year declined and everything like that. And I agree with you, Chris. I mean, this wasn't a guy who was sulking whatsoever. In fact, his energy level was more than I'd ever seen from him at times. And this is just OTAs. But it's also Najee Harris. I mean, things can change every day on a daily basis. I mean, we've seen that just in his public-facing interviews. Sometimes he's bubbly and energetic and engaging. Other times he's, you know, doesn't, he'd rather be anywhere else in the world. So, I mean, this is why I contacted his offseason trainer, speed coach, fitness guy this offseason right before OTAs, because I knew that there was a decent chance Najee was going to be Najee and just kind of, you know, shirk all the media stuff. He tends to be that way sometimes. And that aspect of it, I don't want to make of it more than it is. I think, you know, I think there's a lot of things you could infer or speculate on, but just from 3 years of covering the guy, there's also a decent chance that he just doesn't really like talking to the media and just didn't really feel like doing it over the last few weeks for whatever reason. That might be more of a statement on his rapport with us than his rapport with the team or anything like that. And I think even Najee himself knows sometimes he gets up there, he's too real. He keeps it too real. He has no filter. Says things he shouldn't say, maybe. And yes, he did at least, I think, kind of throw it out there that he'll talk come training camp. It becomes more of a obligation for the players at that stage of the game than it is in May and June. We start getting into fines and things of that nature. Remember, Najee is someone who was mentored and looked up to Marshawn Lynch, one of the most famously cold media people that we've seen in the NFL in recent years. So again,
I'm just here.
It might be exactly. It might be much ado about nothing as far as that goes. But yeah, I mean the lack of activity in mini camp is, it's one of those deals now. You never know. Mike Tomlin always plays it so coy. Is he is Najee managing some sort of injury? If he is, Tomlin said, don't worry about it. It'll be fine come training camp. It's nothing health related that'll bother him then. But I can also think back to training camp a couple years ago when Mike Tomlin said Najee Harris just got stepped on and it was no big deal. And then we found out halfway through the season he was playing with a metal plate in his shoe. So, so you know, these are all developments that we've seen and gone through. So you take all these things for what they're worth, you know, for face value with what people are saying. And I think back to even first day of OTAs, Mike Tomlin asked about Najee Harris and, you know, them declining his option. And he said, there's a lot of depth to those waters. And that's why people were curious to hear Najee speak on it. But those waters remain pretty placid, at least for the next month or so until we get to training camp, or unless Najee decides to get his message out some other way, whatever that message may be, if there even is a message. Maybe he's just steady Eddie and going on about his business.
And look, Najee don't owe nothing to us as journalists. You know, if he doesn't want to talk, he doesn't want to talk, and that's his business. You know, again, Marshawn Lynch, he's like, you know why I'm here. But I look at Najee Harris, and I think some people wonder, does this mean things will be different for him in the offense? Will he not be? Is he not going to be as featured as much? Is this going to be Jaylen Warren number one? It's not going to be anything like that. I think that the very much the plan is to make him and Jaylen Warren and Cordero Patterson, by the way, a big part of this offense that Arthur Smith is envisioning. We heard that from Arthur Smith. We've heard that from Eddie Faulkner. We've heard that from everybody. I think the Najee Harris is still going to be a big part of this Steelers offense, regardless of when and if he talks to the media. And I also think that everything that's being lined up right now with the offensive line, with the emphasis in the run game, the way that they're being coached, I think a lot, and also Eddie Faulkner talked about, you know, them being included in the pass game more. I think a lot of this could be really beneficial to Najee Harris, whether he sticks around with the Steelers for the long term or it's the free agent market and people say like, hey, this guy was pretty good. You know, he got 1,000 yards his first 3 years, and I think he's going to get a lot more than that this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not extrapolating anything about his role from his, you know, decision not to do any interviews. I mean, I think there is a natural awkwardness to it when a team declines your option. Sure. And, you know, Mike Tomlin's basically also chalked it up to some positional related things. Read between the lines. We ain't paying that for a running back in the year 2025. Omar Khan, you know, mentioning that it was a business decision. I feel like the subtext to that is sort of, have you guys watched Jaylen Warren? Like, we know what this guy can do. He was undrafted. Come on now. Like, let's take a step back. As much as we love Najee, this is the economics of the NFL in the modern times. So I think there is maybe a certain subset of the fan base who would like to see Najee kind of just clear the air about all that. But there's also probably an even larger subset of the fan base who's like, we don't care. We know we're on good terms with Najee. We know he's going to work his butt off. We know he's going to play as hard as he always has. So I would also, yeah, probably agree that none of those things are really major concerns. And I'm not as convinced as you, Chris, that Cordarrelle Patterson is going to be a key cog. I think there might be a sprinkle of him.
Not a key cog, but like a third option as a potential. Like, he could be the RB3 of the group.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to see him with more than, I don't know, 20 or 30 carries by the end of the season. But I think catching the ball out of the backfield as a wrinkle here and there for Arthur Smith is maybe a club that he wants to have in his bag for the offense this year. But we'll see what – I'm still curious what Najee Harris is going to say. But that goes kind of beyond the option and everything. I'm just always curious to hear what he's going to say when he gets on the mic, because he is really a fascinating guy and always has a lot of insights and often is not shy to share them. So we'll revisit this come training camp in about a month or so.
Absolutely. And there's still a lot more to cover before training camp. We'll get to all of that here on the North Shore Drive podcast in the coming weeks here as we continue to keep track of what's going on with the Steelers before their training camp. But we got to switch to talk Pirates. They were able to pull out another series win over the weekend, and now Paul Skeens is on the mound. We'll talk about that with Andrew Destin, one of our Pirates beat reporters, in a minute here on the North Shore Drive podcast.
Say his name.
Destiny's Child. Okay, I apologize for not including Andrew Destin's nickname here in the podcast. But before we do that, got to get to a message from one of our great sponsors at Moon Township Honda, where you can get your Hondas from 5802 University Boulevard, or go to their website, moonhonda.com. Here's a message from our friends at Moon Township Honda.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch with greater power. For a CR-V unlike any before, adventure confidently with Honda, Car and Driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history, the CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer for new vehicles or arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter here, switching to the Pittsburgh Pirates, talking with Andrew Destin here, who's at PNC Park right now, getting ready for a 12:35 first pitch between the Pirates and the Reds. Huge game for the division. Mitch Keller on the mound. But Andrew, over the weekend, we got to see the Pirates get some things in. Skeen started the series with a big win, 4-1 on Monday coming into the week. He's now officially 4-0 as a starter. I think they've won six of the seven times he's taken the mound for the Pirates. And now we get into this point, the Pirates still hovering around that place where we've been talking about, you know, a game and a half, whatever, but in the back in the wild card race, now third in the NL Central. What have you seen them do now that they've gotten back home after the road stand where they split with the Cardinals and the Rockies?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen here from the Pirates is just the offensive inconsistency. And when it's firing on all cylinders, it's enough to carry this team, because the starting pitching has been so darn consistent, right? We saw it in the first game of this set against the Reds, where Paul Skeens dazzled and the back end of the bullpen held up its end of the bargain. And then in Tuesday night's game, Tuesday night's game, where Bailey Falter bounces back with seven strong innings of two-run ball. The difference between those two games, the first game you got a little bit of offense, the second game you really didn't, outside of a Cabrian Hayes home run. So I think what we're just seeing is the continued, I don't know if maddening is the word to describe it, but I think it's just inconsistency of it and how that is going to be the determining factor of this team. As much as the bullpen is part of it and that The bullpen has struggled this year. Unless the offense is consistently at least league average or a little bit better, then this team is going to be held back by it because the starting pitching has truly exceeded expectations across the board, and we need to see a little bit more of that from the rest of the group.
Absolutely. Now, we did see Skeens pitch pretty well again. He continues to just wow everyone. He'll be back up on the mound Sunday when they take on the Rays for the final part of that part of this upcoming homestand. But what have you seen from Skeens? As we saw report, you know, talk about how maybe he's found the fifth pitch and he's starting to really expand upon how much he can do out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I think with Paul, it's not too dissimilar a conversation as the one that we have with Jared Jones. But with Paul, what I'm noticing is that those three pitches are significantly better than the curveball and the changeup, right? The splinter, the slider, and the four-seam fastball are all by far his top three pitches, not in any particular order. But with the curveball and the changeup, they don't need to be elite pitches. And that's asking a lot of a guy to have five truly elite pitches, and I don't think that's going to be the case. I think what we're seeing here is that Paul is now at a point with his repertoire that when guys are sitting on just the fastball and the slider or just sitting on the fastball and the splinker, he can mess with eye level and say, okay, I'm going to go horizontal against you with a slider, and then I'm going to go to vertical with a curveball. And it might not be the best curveball, but what it does do is it just gives a different eye level, gives a different perspective that is enough to mess with a guy. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with Paul Skeens. And frankly, it's only going to help him. This is not going to be some riddle that's easy to solve or something of that ilk.
Absolutely. I think this is going to be something that continues to make him one of the more big names in baseball. I think that Paul Skeens is continuing to figure things out. And I'm no pitching expert, but when I watch him out there, I think he's already been dangerous, and the fact that he's adding to how he can be dangerous is rather remarkable. I also want to talk about how this Pirates team, you've seen them kind of adapt to the different struggles that they've seen. We've talked about the batting struggles. We talked about the relievers, but, you know, also how the relievers have started to find answers, a little bit here. Bednar's been better. Chapman's been better. Holderman's, you know, been the same, but it might be more about finding middle relievers that can help get them to that point when the starters don't have their best day. Do you see a move like that coming from Charrington and his staff at all in the coming weeks?
It's tough to say if it's in the coming weeks or maybe in the coming month. I know it's being a little ambiguous on my end, but like I guess that's it. But the whole point is that the trade deadline, right, we're still 6 weeks out from it. So is it a move that's going to be in the next week or two? On his weekly radio show, he recently said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that external options or seeking, you know, help via trade is not going to be the solution for the Pirates' middle relief. It's that they're going to, for lack of better phrasing, it's going to be that dumpster diving that people point to on social media, where it's they see guys with good stuff that maybe the simple stats like an ERA or a walks per nine or K per nine don't look as great as the Pirates think they should be based off their internal modeling. I've opined that, you know, they can make some small additions. One that I've thrown around, and I know in talking with colleagues in Oakland and things of that nature, is that Scott Alexander, a left-hander from the Oakland A's bullpen, who's had a perfectly average to below average season on an expiring deal, he wouldn't cost much money. I see no reason the Pirates couldn't give up, you know, a top 30 prospect or a top 40 prospect, just a total flyer, and send him to the A's for Scott Alexander to be now your second best lefty in the bullpen behind Aroldis Chapman. Is that entirely necessary? Ryan Barucki's coming back. I don't know. So I think a lot of this is contingent. The best way I can put it, a lot of this is contingent on the health of the guys who are currently injured. When do they come back? What do they do once they come back? And then I think we see the Pirates reevaluate. And that might not be until around the 4th of July, maybe the week after that. Now it's just kind of a holding pattern of, okay, what is Ryan Barucki going to provide you? What will Marco Gonzalez give you? What will Martin Perez give you? What will Quinn Priester give you? Like, it's a lot of names. And a lot of those guys could be bullpen options, at the very least starting options. So I think they're just kind of in a little bit of a holding pattern when it comes to the bullpen.
Absolutely. I want to talk to you, stepping away from the Pirates situation right now, a great story that you wrote this week with the passing of baseball and all-around person legend in Willie Mays. You got a chance to talk to Andrew McCutchen about his time with the Giants and the relationship that he developed with Willie Mays. And I think it's a really great story. You talk about his nickname being Pittsburgh to Willie Mays. Can you talk about the opportunity that you got to talk with him about that, and just the things that you learned from Andrew McCutchen about Willie Mays?
Yeah, absolutely. So appreciative of that moment. First off, I know, it's probably 10,000th time I've said it on this podcast or elsewhere, but I grew up in the Bay Area. I grew up a Giants fan. My dad's from San Francisco. So for me, this story certainly hit home even more so. But so appreciative of the time to talk with Andrew McCutchen about this. It just started as an informal chat, turning into an interview. And the biggest takeaways I learned were, it was known to us back in the Bay Area that Willie Mays' eyesight toward the end of his life was not the best. He struggled to see people, but he knew who Andrew McCutchen was based off of his voice. And by knowing of Andrew McCutchen and what he had done earlier in his career, being an MVP, guiding the Pirates to the playoffs, and that's how he got that nickname, Pittsburgh, was by hearing Andrew McCutchen's voice. He'd go, oh, that's Pittsburgh. I know that voice. But it was, I think what I took away from it was just how much Andrew McCutchen is a student of the game. They've got this little nook in the San Francisco Giants clubhouse that this is the stuff of legends, and I get goosebumps on my arms talking about it, but they have a little nook in the clubhouse that was set aside for Willie McCovey, Willie Mays, and Barry Bonds to just sit and talk shop. And anytime all three were in there, McCutchen would say, well, I'm going to go in there, be a fly on the wall, and just soak up as much information as I could. And that's what he did. And, I think those things they show to you why Andrew McCutchen is who he is, why he's been able to have such a long career the way that a Bonds, a McCovey, a Mays did. It's because of that attention to detail, the attention to the fitness, the constantly learning, seeking to get better at the game. And, maybe there were players on the Giants who didn't appreciate what they had at their disposal, that they didn't take those conversations and internalize them. But you can tell with Andrew McCutchen that he did, that he appreciated them. He got the most out of them. And for me to just be like a small snippet of that story to help tell that story, just supremely appreciative of it.
It's truly something special. I suggest everyone reads the story that Andrew wrote. My nickname was Pittsburgh Pirates Andrew McCutchen on relationship with the late Willie Mays. You can read at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, post-gazette.com. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast. And thank you all for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as Brian Bacco. We're back Friday with more here on Talking All Things Pittsburgh Sports here from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.